broadcasting worldwide.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show. This is Mark Kohler and Matt Soren, your hosts of Refresh Your Wealth, the real tax and legal show nationwide every week that's helping you better live your American dream. Excited to be here with you today, and we have got one heck of a show and a show schedule that's just going to, I think, just take it all to a whole new level. Matt, tell our listeners about our topic today. I'm excited about this too.
Yeah, today we're talking about what are my best options to raise money for my business. This is a critical topic. If you're starting a business, looking to expand a business, going to a real estate venture, we're going to talk about the legal strategies of raising money. And I want to emphasize the legal strategies, because there's ways to do it wrong. And those people go to jail, okay, people? This is a really important topic to get right. And you're talking to two attorneys here. We're going to try and steer you in the right direction and simplify it for you. We're not going to talk about this at a 5,000-foot level like some boring securities lawyer. We're going to talk about real strategies real business owners are using to legally raise money today.
Yeah, and I just want to welcome our listeners from all over the country. We've got listeners on AM radio. I've got a new affiliate out of Fresno, California, KVHF. And I want to welcome you guys and love Fresno. And also iTunes listeners, you're catching this on iTunes every week. You can listen on iTunes. Please go to the podcast, Refresh Your Wealth, and subscribe. Give us a little 5-star rating. We give away a little something later in the show. We'll mention that later for those. And also on Biz Talk Radio, you can listen live at biztalkradio.com. And always go into refreshyourwealth.com. You get all the information needed about the show.
Yeah, now as those of you who are familiar with the show, we like to kick off our show with a tax and legal tip, give you some quick information on some useful tips from accountants or attorneys in the trenches. We're going to start off today with our legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. In today's legal tip, we have Jaron Burgesson. He's an attorney in the Utah office of KKOS Lawyers, a mighty fine law firm, if I might add. Jaron, you got a legal tip for us today?
I do, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show. I wanted to talk real quickly about solo 401ks and what they're about. And there's so many great advantages, and I've had clients real recently wanting to set them up, but you have to make sure that you're eligible. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what you have to do to be eligible for a solo 401k.
Well, Jaron, I'm glad you bring this up. This is a great topic, and a lot of folks out there may be going, what's a solo 401k? I don't want to fly solo. I want to fly in a passenger jet with a lot of other people. I'll feel a lot safer. No. Here, let me tell you. What a solo 401k is about is you as small business owners can establish an affordable 401k for yourself, where 10, 15 years ago, you just couldn't do that. I mean, if your company didn't offer a 401k, you were SOL, and I'm not talking statute of limitations. I mean, you're out in the cold. But now as a small business owner, you can have a 401k, and they're generally called solo. But, Jeremy, I'm glad you're bringing up these regulations because they can be tricky.
Yeah, they can. And one of the things that's really important, one of the qualifications, is that you have to have a small business. You have to be self-employed in some way. You have to have self-employment activities. That doesn't mean you can't be a W-2 employee and do something on the side, be a consultant or, sell car seat covers on Etsy, or if you're really good looking like me, be a male model on the side.
Okay.
if you've got some sort of self-employment activities, you can open up a solo 401k. But if you don't, you can't.
Okay. So I can have an IRA, but to have a 401k, I've got to have that small business.
Correct. And that small business can't have any full-time employees in it. That's really the other important piece of this.
Now, what about, here's a common question that comes up. Let's say, you know, I might have a 401k at an employer where I work as a day job, and I'm a real estate investor on the side, and I have some rental real estate. Maybe I have an LLC that owns that rental real estate. Could I set up a 401k for myself in that LLC with my rental properties?
That's a bit of a tough question. Generally, if you're not getting some sort of compensation or salary from what you're doing, which you're really not going to be doing if you've got rentals on the side, you're generally not eligible to set up a solo 401k.
No, and I do want to add to this, and this is an interesting point. I was just giving a lecture on this in Salt Lake City last week, and there are a few tricks to that process. And I like what Jerem said. You can't hire yourself, in a rental property business, you can't establish a 401k for yourself. Jerem is spot on. But what some people will do is set up a management company as a separate sister company to manage their rentals just so they can backdoor into a 401k. Now, I want to say this to our listeners out there. That is not a typical or average a typical strategy that we would recommend, for certainly not for the average investor. But I like what Matt said, is that if you've got a small business on the side, even if you have a 401k at work, you can have a second 401k in your small business.
Right. Just make sure you're not, you know, going above contribution limits, and you have to be careful. But yes, absolutely. Yeah, having a 401k at work and then doing a solo 401k on the side is possible and can be very beneficial.
All right. Well, Jerem, thanks so much for that great tip on solo 401ks. Great for self-employed people. The number one place we tell people to go and look at who are trying to save for retirement and are self-employed with no other full-time employees. Thanks, Jerem, for being with us. We're going to move over to our tax tip now.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Man, I love it. Just that nice little tax tip, folks. I love this part of our show because I love saving money. So yours truly, Mark Kohler, I get to share a tax tip this week. We have some rotating CPAs that will come on the show from time to time. But these last couple weeks, it's been deadlines right and left. And so I get the honor of sharing a tax tip. And Matt, I was just telling Matt before our show started today, I had a phone consult. Now, this, of course, I would never share. I want you folks to know that, some of our wonderful listeners, I'm never going to share your name or your dirty laundry on the show, but I can certainly share this general example we had. I had a phone call with a young couple, five kids, a small business, and last year they had close to $7,000 in healthcare expenses, and on their tax return, they were only able to deduct about $500 or $600. It was terrible. They itemized. Their CPA didn't bring up any other strategies. And under the Affordable Health Care Act, aka Obamacare, there are a lot of options and strategies for this. And the health savings account is a big one that we love.
Yeah, the health savings account's an awesome one. That's one I actually use. Now, what, you have to have a special type of insurance policy, though, in order to qualify for the HSA, though, don't you?
Yes, you do. Now, some of you that have a day job, now this is one where you don't have to have a small business to take advantage of this tax strategy. Some of you at work, and this is the time it's going to be happening, this kind of late summer and fall, when your employer says it's time for open enrollment, you're going to want to choose a high deductible plan that is HSA qualifying. If you're generally healthy, why not? Go with a high deductible plan. You hardly ever go to the doctor, and then that allows you to open up an HSA all over the place. We can talk about that for 2 seconds. Amazing. I'll open the door for Matt on that one. But then as a small business owner, when you're doing your open enrollment later this year, just make sure you choose that higher deductible plan, and that opens the account. That allows you to open up this amazing HSA account, which is like a supercharged IRA. And Matt, oh my gosh, tell us what we can do with that. I mean, it's just nuts.
Yeah, so this is a big topic, but you know, health savings accounts can be invested like an IRA, and they can be what is called self-directed. So you could buy real estate even in your HSA. So you're getting a tax deduction putting the money in. That money can be invested. It grows tax deferred, And you get to use that money for any healthcare expenses you may have in your family if you did a family HSA, or for yourself if you're just an individual. So a lot of cool things you can do with the HSA. Great tax strategy. We all have healthcare expenses. That's why I think everybody should be really looking into that. But Mark, what about for small business owners? Do they have any other options they could do if you own your own business?
Oh my gosh. Well, when you open up that whole can of worms of healthcare, bottom line, folks, is you're going to be coming around again to that enrollment period with Obamacare this fall. Be looking at how healthy you are or not. You might want to consider a health reimbursement arrangement, which is called an HRA, but the health savings account is the tip for today, folks. If you've got medical expenses over and above your insurance, and that could be eyes, dental, copays, think about a health savings account. It can rock your world. Now, when we come back from our break,
yeah,
I'll just say this right now. When we come back from our break, we're going to be talking about our questions from last week and our new question for this coming week with some amazing guests for those that are participating in our questions of the week.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. Today we're talking about what are the best options to raise money for my business. Really important and critical topic as you're out there in the business world. Excited to be with you today. We're going to be breaking that down into practical, real strategies you can actually use. Every week as part of the show, one of the things we do is some questions of the week. And we're going to go over last week's question and an answer. And we'll give out this week's new question as well. So let me just jump into last week's question, give the answer, and then Mark and I will.
Yeah, and don't forget, tell them the prize. I mean, this is a big deal.
That's right. That's right. You know, if you answer the question right, you get a copy of Mark's book or my book. And not only is it a copy of our book, it's a signed copy. And those are worth a lot. We just ask you not to put them up on eBay or anything like that. You know, it's meant to be really just to
yeah, read it first, then you can eBay it. Yeah.
All right, 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 right. Yeah, show some respect. No. All right. Well, let me go over last week's question here, and I'll give the answer, and then Mark and I can go ahead and talk about that here. But the question from last week that we posed was, would an umbrella insurance policy protect me if I cause an accident while texting and driving? Now, Brent from Bountiful, Utah wrote in and said, if texting and driving is against the law in your city, then your insurance may not cover you in an accident. What do you think about that answer, Mark?
Well, I hate to say to Brent, I'm going to disagree with Brent. We're going to give him the winner of that. What's going to happen is there's going to be some criminal issues, that's for sure. And so we've got that's a whole other topic, the criminal aspects that would come with that. But as for your insurance coverage, you're going to have insurance coverage whether or not it is against the law. That's the interesting part. I've interviewed a number of insurance agents that your auto policy and your umbrella policy is going to cover you whether or not it's illegal. For example, and you're in a drunk driving accident, your insurance is going to protect you. Now, there's some variations to that, but you are going to have coverage.
Yeah, now there is some public policy issues there. And, if you Google this question, which I think a lot of our listeners did, you'll find there's been a lot written up. I mean, New York Times articles and such on this about, people worrying that insurance companies are going to not cover you in this situation. And I want to touch on one of those coverage issues, though, and make one clarifying point on an umbrella policy here that I think is really important to understand. And that is, an umbrella insurance policy is a policy that goes on top of any insurance policy you already have. So in this example, you would have an auto insurance policy. Now, whatever coverage your auto insurance policy had, if your auto insurance policy would cover this texting and driving accident, then your umbrella policy of insurance would cover it. But if you didn't have a policy that covered this, the umbrella policy doesn't automatically cover anything new. All an umbrella policy does is it covers existing coverage you may already have.
Yeah, and I think it's important to point out that Matt and I are both not licensed insurance agents, and it's always important each year that you have a call agent, find out what coverage you're getting with your autos, your home, your umbrella. But I want to make another important point on this topic. As I've talked to other insurance agents, they've said, of course, most policies are going to cover you if you're texting and driving, but you're going to get dropped the next day. So buckle up. Good luck trying to get insurance the next day. But also, I was able to interview Brian Banner. He's a personal injury litigation attorney here in Southern California, and it is just excellent. If you have a personal injury issue, you want to reach out to this guy, email me, and I'll give you his contact info. But he talked about the issue of texting and driving, and what's happening now in courts is what's called punitive damages. And punitive damages are where the court, in a DUI case, drunk driving a case, and you kill someone, you may have a damage awarded from the court that includes punitive damages. Now, the insurance company may cover policy limits up to a certain amount, but they are not going to cover punitive damages. And what Brian is seeing in his personal injury circles and in cases around the country is that punitive damages are going to start happening in these texting cases. So when you're texting and driving and you think, oh, well, my insurance will cover me if there's a problem, heaven forbid you or you do hurt yourself or someone else. But don't think that if there's punitive damages, your insurance is going to rush to your rescue. And that could stick with you for life. That could be just a devastating financial issue, too.
Yeah, and there's, you know, those of you who may have had prior accidents and know about that pain in getting insurance, a lot of states have special types of riders you have to get and things like that. And it becomes a very costly endeavor to get insurance so you can drive a car. I've even known people who have not driven a car because it's so costly to get insurance because of a driving record. And texting and driving is one of those that can hurt. So, Mark, what do we have for next week's question, though? Keep in mind, everyone, if you have an answer to the question, you can write in to Mark or Matt. That's Matt with one T, M-A-T or M-A-R-K, at kkoslawyers.com with your answer to the question. The winner does get a free signed copy of Mark or my book. But Mark, what's our question for this week?
You bet. And I want to just say again, Brent, we're pleased we'll be in touch with you. And we'll get you a copy of one of our books, your choice. And you were the most fast response and the most accurate. They were all over the board. Now, for this week's question. Now, folks, I'm going to throw you a softball, and I want to give you a little bit of a preliminary setup to this question. As many of you know, Matt Sorensen and I, around the country, as we speak and talk and in our books, talk about rental real estate as an important part of your portfolio. We are not saying you stay out of the stock market or you don't have a well-diversified financial plan, which you should. You should have and work with a financial advisor, but also have real estate a part of that. And rental real estate is critical to building wealth and tax planning. So here's my softball. Now, we're going to take the first and most accurate response. So I know we're going to get some emails in immediately after or during the show, possibly. Here's the question. It's two-part question. What is the straight-line depreciation year? What are the years for straight-line depreciation for a single-family home residence? And what is the straight-line depreciation year length of years for a commercial property? So with a commercial property, I straight line depreciate over how many years? And then with a single family home rental property, I depreciate over how many years? There's two numbers there, folks. Those with the first answer will get a book of your choice from Matt or myself personally autographed. And make sure you send that to Matt, M-A-T, at kkoslawyers.com or Mark at kkoslawyers.com.
All right, we look forward to your responses. Let's go ahead and start delving into today's topic here. We're talking about raising money in your business, how to do it legally. And Mark, there's a number of different ways people talk about this. You and I have tried to find an easy, digestible way to break it down into three different categories. And what are those three categories here? Let's try and just break those out, and we'll separate them here.
You bet. Those three categories. And folks, right after the break, we're going to come back and talk about investors, lenders, and partners. Now, let me repeat that. Investors, lenders, and partners. And they're going to be treated different ways when you go out and raise capital for your business. See you right after the break, folks. And don't change the dial. All right. Welcome back, everybody, to Refresh Your Wealth with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. Excited to be talking about the topic of raising capital for your business, which, of course, is a major goal of a lot of business owners that want to take their business to the next level. They may have certain expertise or a product or service, and just a little extra capital can make a big difference in their business. And as we've mentioned right before the break, we have, through our blog articles and speeches across the country over the years, broken this down into three what we feel are edible bite-sized pieces that make sense of this. And that's the lender category, the partner category, and the investor category. And this is a very, very important topic, and we encourage all of you to actually take notes if you can. If you're driving, make sure you get back to iTunes and listen to the podcast. Matt, why don't you break it down for us on this lender category, because this is a big one.
Yeah, lender, this is a very popular category. We're not talking about walking into your bank and asking for a business loan here. We're talking about raising money from other people. This may be friends you have, an uncle, whatever. You know, so you're going out and you're raising money. The lender model is the first and easiest. Pretty straightforward. You're going to have someone who acts as the bank, who's the lender, who's going to loan money to your business. There's generally going to be a promissory note. That's the loan document between you, or excuse me, your business, and this borrower, or excuse me, the lender. And in that document, it's going to lay out the terms of the arrangement, you know, what interest you're going to pay and such. Now, from a securities law standpoint, this is the important point from a legal standpoint, we're talking about incidental type loans here. You get a startup loan from a friend or someone you know, fine. But you cannot go out and advertise in a newspaper or on the web or any of those types of things saying, hey, loan my business money at, you know, I offer 10% interest. You're going to cross some securities lines there, though. If you're talking to people you know, though, and they're loaning money to your business on an isolated type incident, there's a transaction exemption called an isolated transaction exemption that can work as you're raising capital. If it's for real estate and you're securing it against property, then there's also an exemption for that if that loan is fully secured that makes it not a security as well, so you stay outside of these securities law pitfalls.
Now, I also want to point out there's a special exemption called the family reunion exemption. So what you want to do is at your next family reunion, have the loan documents in the trunk of your car. And then as you're walking around having some potato salad and barbecue, you can be hitting up all your family members going, hey, why don't you loan me some money? Now, that is not regulated by the SEC, Matt. Am I correct?
That's right. They have no jurisdiction in that area. So,
And Matt, let me point out, the nice thing about that exemption is that inevitably what will happen is you're going to screw up and not pay back the family member, and then you will be ostracized from all future family reunions. So there's a payoff in the back end that not only do you get money for your business, you get a pass from all the future family reunions. It's great. I mean, it's really a phenomenal strategy.
Yeah, I thought you were going to call that punishment, but you're true. That's kind of a reward, huh?
Yeah, I mean,
guess it depends on whether you like your family. But
yeah, no, but I want to say this from an important standpoint. This lender strategy is great, but make sure you document it properly. And oh my gosh, we have so many people that do it with an email or go ask family for money and then don't document it properly. If you're going to document it with anyone, make sure it is with your friends or family, because when it could go bad, you don't want to ruin your relationship at the same time.
Yeah, and I think that's when we're talking about laws here and securities in particular, documentation is in your favor. I think a lot of people think, I'll just do it as fast and loose as I can get away with. If the people giving me money don't want documents or don't demand them, I'm not going to go to the expense or hassle of doing it. That is a big pitfall. Do not fall into that. If you ever have legal problems or you got the SEC asking you questions, what do you want to give them? Paperwork, okay? You want they like
help
paperwork.
Me. Help you.
Right. So so document that. And let's jump into the second one, though. This one's a little more tricky to explain, but the second one is partnership. Why don't you kind of intro that, Mark, how do the partnership works?
You bet. Let's open the doors to that. And that's ironic. Literally this morning at 10 a.m. I had a conference call with some very sophisticated and business owners, and we literally talked about this topic on a conference call today, and I used a key word here, and I think this helps really define the topic. I told them How are you going to raise money for this business? Do you really want a partner to your business, or do you want a silent partner? And they said, we kind of want a silent partner. And I go, okay, that's not a partner. We would go to our third category of a investor, because, and we'll come to that in a moment. But when we talk partner, we're talking about people that are going to participate in your business, so that if there's a problem and you lose money, they can't come crying later because you involved them. They are not a silent partner. And there's a lot of ways to say this, but it can be dicey.
Yeah. Now, and I don't want to get too legalese on everybody here, but there's a famous case called the Howey case. This is a U.S. Supreme Court case. It's still used to teach this issue in security law in law schools today. But what came out of that case is they said a security is an investment of money in a common enterprise where profits and losses are solely derived from the efforts of others. And that third thing, profits and losses derived solely from the efforts of others, is different in a partnership. Because in a partnership, everybody's making decisions, they're involved, and so it's not solely derived from others. So a partnership doesn't fit into that definition, therefore you fall outside of the securities rules. Now, one thing to keep in mind, you could be the working partner in the business, and you could have someone who's a cash partner in the business. But that cash partner needs to be involved in major decision making. And as long as you're involving them in major decisions, you can still have someone who does the day-to-day work and management, so to speak, and that's okay.
Yeah, and I think it's important here, too, that we typically at our law firm design these types of LLCs, limited liability companies, for these partnership structures. Now, we may use an S corporation in the process to do some tax planning for the operational partners. Folks, just don't run out to your online company service that you're going to hear about on the radio and say, oh, I'm just going to click, click, click with a mouse and set up an LLC and think you're fine. It is very important that these roles and responsibilities are defined. It doesn't have to cost a lot. Across the country, we charge $800 for any entity in any state, and you get to talk with a lawyer to do it. But the point here is you can design an LLC where the partnership provisions are defined properly and what those decision-making roles are. And that's really your get-out-of-jail-free card if you put it in the LLC document to begin with properly.
Yeah, and RM documents come with the get-out-of-jail-free card. It's kind of like the Monopoly one, if you recall that one. No, just kidding. Now, one thing I just want to point out, too, on this partnership is we're talking small groups here, all right? I'm not talking about putting 100 people into a partnership or even 20 people. We're talking about single digits, all right? Maybe it's 5 or 6 people total, and it could just be 2 or 3. But you don't want it to be too big of a group where you have people who are quote-unquote cash partners, because then they don't really have a say, and you start falling back into the securities definition. And there are some cases about that. There's an article on my blog, which you can get, by the way, if you subscribe to our newsletter at refreshyourwealth.com. Sign up for our newsletter there, and you get access to all of Mark and my blog articles that come out every week. What else do you want to say on partner, Mark? We got the investor one. That's a big one left. But maybe we close off this partnership topic here. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. Well, I've got an important point here. And I think a lot of people say, well, practically, what do I do then? Okay, guys, I set up my LLC. Well, this is where that attorney consult comes into play. When you work with one of the Matt or I or 5 lawyers, we're going to get on the phone and take you through some of those steps, like having regular quarterly meetings, having regular annual meetings, for sure. Making sure you have more than just a piece of paper that, oh, I registered my LLC online, click, 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 I'm good. No, no, no. You should have a quality operating agreement. You should be doing minutes. And a lot of people think, oh, if I do an LLC, I don't have to follow those quote-unquote corporate responsibilities. Oh my gosh, people, if you have partners and people that put money into this project and they have decision-making roles, you've got to define it, and you've got to talk about this. And that's what we do in a consult with clients, is help walk them through that. And whoever your attorney is, make sure they're walking you through that. This is not, again, something you want to just throw out online.
Yeah, and the nice part is when you go through that process, you save your headaches. You save yourself from headaches down the road, because if you have a well-defined operating agreement, everyone's signing it. And the operating agreement is like a partnership agreement. But then they know what the expectation is, the people who put in money. You know what your role and responsibility is doing the work.
Yeah, and I love it. And what's nice is that the family reunion, You can pull out this document, put it out on the hood of the car, and you can have your aunt and uncle sign it right there, then get back to the potato salad and barbecue. Now, folks, right after our break, we're going to be coming back and talking about the investor classification, because when you start bringing in silent partners and you want to go out and advertise, which is okay, you can do it. You can bring in money from people out there on the World Wide Web, but they're called investors. So right after our break, we're going to talk about the investor classification, and that is one that you don't want to pull out at the family reunion. But folks, enjoy those barbecues. It's a great time of year.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. We're talking about how to legally raise money in your business today. And no matter how you're listening, we appreciate you being with us today, whether it's via BizTalk Radio, app biztalkradio.com, or via AM. We also want to thank those listening to us on iTunes. If you're listening to us on iTunes, we would love a five-star review. Give us a five-star review. We'll give you a shout-out and read your review on the air. And just keep in mind, as Shakespeare said, those who do not show their love do not love. So if you like the show, let us know and give us a five-star review. If you don't like the show, well, do something else. Just, you know, you can skip over that. We don't need a one-star review.
I love it. Thanks everyone, for your support. We appreciate it. We've had a tremendous response with social media this past week, with folks around the country receiving our announcement of the new show and excited about it. We've been doing this show for 8 years. So for many of you that are listening on AM around the country, please know this show's been going on for 8 years. We're finally syndicated on over 14 markets around the country. We're so excited about that. But we need you to go to iTunes and give us a review, give us a shout out. So for all of our religious followers that have been there for years and have been giving us some love out on social media this week, please get over to iTunes and say a couple words and give us some stars. Matt, now tell us about this investor. And I often, of course, quote Matt's name in vain. He is really truly our securities expert in our office. This investor classification is one where you can get into real trouble if you don't do it right. And it's okay. You can go raise money from investors, but it's doing it the right way.
Yeah. And so when we're talking about here, we've gone past the lender, past the partner. Now we're talking about the investor. And by investor, we mean they're basically investing the money in your business and just waiting for you to pay them back. Big money. All right. So Obviously, everybody has an expectation they're going to make money when they invest. So, but when you go down this path, you want to be really careful on how you do it. I first want to talk about some of the reasons you might want to go down this path and some of the perks. Then we'll talk about some of the legal issues on how to get there and what you need to do. First, the sweet thing about going down this investor model is you can advertise. There are models here that allow you to advertise where you can do what the law calls solicit. So you can solicit people to be an investor into your company. Tell them about what your company is doing. You can be giving presentations. You can have a website. There are certain things that you cannot do unless you're in this investor model here. Now, we're going to talk about the documents you need to do later here, but I want to give you some reasons why you'd go down this route. One, you're going to advertise. Second, you're going to run the business. They're not going to be involved in decision making. They're not partners. As Mark said earlier, they'll be a silent partner, quote unquote. And so those are some great perks on why you might think about going down this route.
Yeah, and I like the fact that Matt brought up the word solicit or solicitation. I want to give a disclaimer here that we're talking about soliciting for money, and we're going to leave it at that. So, Matt, this is FCC regulated, so watch yourself. So I'm just saying that.
Yeah, in case anyone cut into this show at the wrong time here, that is, we're talking about soliciting for investments. All right, let's keep this PG, folks.
Now, Matt, could you do this without, though, Matt? I want you to bring up the word crowdfunding. There's a lot of sophisticated investors out there that go, well, Matt, well, you guys, you just can't skip over crowdfunding. Why don't you just take 2 seconds and tell us where crowdfunding fits into this investor model, too?
Yeah. So let me, there's really kind of maybe three different things to talk about here. Let me hit crowdfunding first as kind of the new topic. It's in the news quite a bit. What crowdfunding is it's a way that there's a law passed in Congress, a federal law back in 2012 as part of what was called the Jobs Act. And this law was enacted and it allows small businesses to raise up to $1 million to start their business, and it provided some really low filing requirements and documentation requirements. Whereas before that law was passed, if you wanted to raise capital and go advertise and solicit people, you had to create a mountain of documents, get audits, register with the SEC. It was like, you know, you're writing six-figure checks to lawyers and accountants just to get paperwork done. So they simplified some laws part of this act and allows you to raise up to $1 million. Concept of crowdfunding is you're raising small amounts of money from large groups of people, so you're spreading the risk, and therefore the laws say, you know, let's let people risk small amounts of money and start up businesses. They wanted to spur job growth. Now, the bummer part about crowdfunding is at the federal level, the SEC still has not implemented it. Kind of ticks me off, frankly, that our government has taken this long and they still haven't implemented it, but it has passed in certain states, so there are about a dozen states now that have crowdfunding within their state and crowdfunding laws. If you're just working within that state, the business is there and the investors are there. But that's the new topic of crowdfunding.
And I think bringing it back to investors, there are, again, this outside of the crowdfunding world, this is where you would do what's oftentimes called these Reg D filings or a PPM. And we have lawyers at our office, and we do this all the time for clients around the country where they want silent investors. And that's probably the biggest point I want to make as we conclude this show, is that you don't feel like you have to borrow from someone or you have to have a partner. If you want investors and you want to advertise and solicit, there's ways to do it. It's just going to cost a little bit more in legal fees. Sometimes it can range from $10,000 to $20,000 in legal fees. But if you're trying to raise $1 million or $2 million, that's okay. It's a part of the cost. So keep in mind that investors are a good thing, and it just has to be done right.
Yeah, and essentially what those documents are going to entail, if you go down that PPM or Reg D, as Mark said, is you're going to have some disclosure documents. Sometimes it's called an offering memorandum or private placement memorandum. Explains the business, gives the business plan, explains the background of the person raising money, goes over some basic financials. So those are things to expect in those documents. You do need to do a filing with the SEC. It's a very basic filing, though. That's the investor model, great way to raise capital and really take control of the business, just requires a little more work on the front end.
Folks, thanks for listening today. We love this show. We love the American Dream. We love that you're here with us. Please get out and tell your friends, your family about the Refresh Your Wealth show, and get to the blog. We've got a great newsletter every week that's free with deadlines. And here, if you're listening, you're going to know how to get a hold of us. But raise money, get your business to the next level, and we'd hope to be a help to you along the way. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.